Hey, Harpy Hour fans. We're running a very special promotion for all of our loyal listeners.
It's a merch giveaway, specifically our logo stickers, because, well, it's the only merch we have right now.
But there's a catch. We're not just giving them away. You have to earn them. To get a sticker, subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or any of your preferred streaming platforms.
So send us a screenshot or picture proof that you've done both of those things. So again, that's subscribing to the show and leaving a review. You can send it to any of our social media accounts at Harpy Hour Pod, or you can email it to harpyhourpodcast@gmail.com. Of course, also give us your address so we can mail you the sticker.
You'll also get a shout out on social media and in an episode of the show for our thanks. And don't worry, if you can only do one of those two things for whatever reason, I don't know why, do both, you'll still get a shout out, but no sticker. So make the effort. Do better.
This promo is only going to last until we've given away our first 20 stickers, or if this whole thing crashes and burns, whatever happens first. So hurry up! Run, don't walk, and get your sticker now.
Also, don't forget to tell your friends, because you know what's cooler than having matching stickers on your water bottle or a laptop?
Nothing.
Nothing. There's literally nothing cooler than that.
Nope.
So tell your friends, you can each get stickers, show off your friendship, and share your Harpy love.
And remember, if you want to see even more Harpy Hour merch coming up, support us on Patreon. These funds will help us improve the show and grow our brand.
Now, before you enjoy the episode, check out this promo for another awesome podcast to add to your list. And stick around for Harpy Hour!
So just to add on to all of this, let's throw in some gargoyles to continue on with the theme. In the past, gargoyles were supposed to ward off evil spirits. What evil spirits are at an airport?
Lucifer.
Yeah, that's probably why they had to have the gargoyles to save them from Lucifer coming after them. Because, yeah, that looks like an evil spirit. Like, totally.
Hi, guys. I'm Holly from Curly Conspiracies. I hope you liked the clip from our Denver Airport episode. If you want to find out more about this conspiracy, go to curlyconspiracies.com, or you can find us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Now, back to what you all came for.
Harpy Hour may contain explicit language, as well as graphic, violent, and sexual content. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Harpy Hour.
Aloha.
Yay.
We're so excited.
Usually I'm the one that sounds like kind of grumpy or something in the intro. Tracy's usually the happy one.
Because it's early in the morning.
It's been the longest week.
It is Tuesday.
Yeah. Usually for you, it's the morning stuff. And for me and Tracy, it's just been a long ass day.
It's been a long week and it's Tuesday. It reminds me of that meme from 30 Rock where Tina Fey is like, oh, it's been such a long week. And Alec Baldwin is like, Lemon, it's Tuesday. Like, that's my life today.
We are the Harpies.
I'm Tracy.
I'm Liz.
I'm Steph.
Oh, God. I don't
Tracy
like
and I are trading roles today.
I don't How does really it feel, Tracy? Steph?
How does it feel to have someone peppy and happy when you're grumpy?
Ugh.
Okay, Steph, I'm waiting for you to sing a song.
Yeah. There's my serenade.
There was nothing. There was no cue. There was nothing to sing.
Tracy doesn't need a
cue. I don't need a cue.
She usually goes off of something
Bust
that we said.
You're not checking all the boxes.
This
C-plus
is a subpar Tracy.
Tracy
representation.
All right. You know what? I'm doing it live. I had no training.
I demand an understudy.
I'll work on it.
This is our podcast where we share ridiculous stories in history, science, and entertainment. Ooh.
Thanks for coming to work today, guys.
It was rough.
It sounds like you didn't come to work today.
I mean, I'm here. Physically.
Have I told you guys about my recent binge watching Guilty Pleasure?
No. But I'm very excited.
Have you heard of, I don't think it's on anymore. I think it's over, but all of the seasons are on Netflix. Have you heard of The Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce?
Yes, I've heard of that.
I think it might have been a CW show. I'm not really sure. I make that assumption because they referenced the CW, but it's like, I don't understand why I like the show. Like, I can't relate to it in any way whatsoever. So it's about these like...
You can't relate to divorced women?
No. It's about these like four besties and they're like lower middle age women. Like they're all like kind of premenopausal. And so they're all like, most of them are divorced. And at this point in the show I'm on, like one of them's about to get married. So I can't relate to any of those things. I can't relate to wedding planning. I can't relate to divorce or having kids and being a single mom or anything like
that. So are you just like a spectator? Like
Is it kind of like when you watch the Jersey Shore and you're like, this is such a train wreck, it makes me feel better about myself?
Yeah, it's a little bit just like escapism. So these four women are also like LA socialites. So one's a famous writer, one's this like hotshot attorney, and one used to be a model and now she's just like in the art scene. And so they all just have these like super really rich lives. And yeah, they're just like regular nightly events hanging out together are like high society cocktail receptions.
So we literally can relate to nothing. Go ahead.
Literally none of this.
But I just aspire to be them. One, they have killer wardrobes.
I mean,
I aspire to be a divorced single mother.
They seem to be pulling it off.
Well, maybe not all of them seem very happy, but yeah, they're pulling it off. They've got their alimony checks and they've got their swanky penthouse apartments and their shoes and their dresses and their cocktails. They seem to be living a good life, minus the few of them that have kids and stuff. But
I mean, as the person here who is like getting ready to commit her life to one penis for the rest of her days, I feel like that's the best of both worlds, where you can, you know, still use your husband's credit card, essentially, but, or your ex-husband, I suppose, but you also get the entire queen size bed.
It is pretty sweet.
You don't have to share mattress custody.
That's only if you get the mattress in the divorce.
That's true.
I like how Tracy's not even married yet and she's idolizing the divorcee lifestyle.
I'm really just the mattress. Really, it's the mattress custody.
You have multiple rooms in your house when you just have separate rooms.
You could have your own mattress.
I know, but like, you know, you can't cuddle or have sexy times or whatever. Like, it's weird to be like, okay, now go to your room. Your other room.
Why don't you get like a king size bed?
I so want a king size bed.
You can do what you need to do and then be as far apart as possible and not touch when you want that.
I'm like, how am I the one that needs more space in bed when I am half your size? Like, I don't understand.
Are you starfishing?
Not usually, but I would like to have that option.
All right, Tracy.
Yeah.
What are you gracing us with today?
Okay. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Not yet.
Are you ready?
Nope. Wait. Okay, go.
Okay. Imagine what gonna happen when you try to tax our whiskey. That's what I'm talking about today.
I don't know what to make of this accent. I don't know if that counts as an accent.
It was a
rap.
Stylized pronunciation. And all will come to light.
It's from Hamilton, no?
In my segment.
Is it from Hamilton?
It is from Hamilton.
Look at me.
I mean,
catching your Hamilton references.
Great job, Tracy, too.
I would say sub-Tracy would be... Because she's not really pulling off full Tracy, but she's
an prototype. I need to be screaming into my microphone.
My microphone volume is down right now, so...
Right, to accommodate for you screaming into your microphone.
I mean, I feel like...
I live in a condo. I have neighbors. I can't really do that.
You're fine. Hey, Liz.
Yeah?
What you talking about today?
Today, I am harping on the Canadian cartel.
Ooh. I think I know what this is.
Are they just like stealing Labatt Blue and maple syrup? Like, I don't understand.
It's maple syrup.
Is it?
Hey now.
I'm such a good guesser.
I also mentioned this on our previous podcast.
Right, that's why I thought I knew what it was. You mentioned the maple syrup heist of some sort.
Okay.
I don't remember the context of it or what
it was
about. Well,
that might have been stored in my lizard braid somewhere, but I did not think of that.
But you should also, maybe when I actually go through it, it might ring some bells. You should both recognize it from other podcasts that we've listened to. I'm not the first to cover this, because that's how I heard about it.
Mm.
So you're plagiarizing.
So Liz is plagiarizing, yeah.
Okay.
Steph great. Just did that in our last recording.
What did I do in my last recording?
Or one of the
guys,
last.
Like, really, be original. Like, God.
You did a segment in our last, like, two or three
I'm fucking carrying
that,
this.
Oh, the animals.
From
yeah.
another. Yeah.
Yeah, Tracy, because no one's ever covered the murder you podcast. Covered early on. That's brand new.
I covered that murder.
Yeah, I'm saying no one's ever done it before. No podcast
it's
has ever touched it before.
Plagiarizing if it's your content.
Self-plagiarism is a thing.
I mean, it's not a very good thing.
I'm just saying, I'm sure plenty of true crime podcasts have touched on it.
Maybe.
Nothing is original anymore. Everything is garbage.
Okay.
Steph, what are you plagiarizing from the internet today?
This might be original because it's pretty recent, actually. So, boom. I'm going to talk to you guys about Mother's Love.
I mean, that okay. does not sound original in any sense of the word.
Oh, you will see.
Mother's Love.
Mm-hmm. Side note to our listeners, we do have sources.
Yes, we do. I keep a list.
Is this like an Oedipal thing? Like Oedipus when he wants to fuck his mom?
Yeah, because that's never been done before.
That's what I was. That was going to be my next comment. All right.
You'll have to wait and see.
I was thinking it was a modern example.
Stay awake through my segment and you will know.
Fine. As a reminder, my teaser was, imagine what's going to happen when you try to tax our whiskey. Which is a reference to Hamilton, which is a reference to the Whiskey Rebellion.
Ooh, I think I remember seeing this on our topics spreadsheet, and I was like, God damn it, how did Tracy beat me to a whiskey one?
I mean, you guys are really like falling off of...
I saw it on the list too, and then recently I was listening to like old episodes of another podcast, and this topic came up and I was like, no, I can't listen to it. Somebody's covering this. I gotta wait. I thought it was Liz's actually.
No, this is actually a very Tracy topic and I will tell you why.
Because it's Hamilton related.
Well, sure.
New York City.
I mean, no. So I took this as a cautionary tale.
Cautionary
for two reasons. It's a cautionary
tale.
One, do not fuck with Western Pennsylvanians.
Oh boy.
Oh. Some Pennsylvania pride shit.
Two, the government will find a way to ruin your fun always and forever. Also, the cabinet battles are the best songs in Hamilton. Do not at me, listeners. That's just a fact. Okay, let's jump in. The background. Let's set the stage here. Let's set the scene. The American Revolution ends in 1783. George Washington is president. Okay, here we go. So this all starts in March of 1791, which I'll have you know, I typed as 1971 throughout this entire thing and had to
I thought you were like Googling like events from that year and somehow not finding what you were looking for.
No. Alcohol transport is becoming an issue, quote, nationwide, because there's like barely a nation at this point.
Colony-wide.
Let's go through why this is a problem. So, beer spoils way too easily. Like, it spoils way faster than rum and whiskey. and it's harder to transport because, you know, carbonation and whatnot. Rum distillation was interrupted by the Revolutionary War.
Why is the rum gone?
Exactly. So this makes sense, but I didn't think of it. Rum was a huge part of the triangle trade between England, Africa, and the Americas because it came from the sugar cane that slaves would tend to in the Caribbean. And since rum is like distilled sugar cane, this connection to England was cut off when the colonies rebelled. So anyone that was drinking rum during the war was like considered a redcoat, a traitor, etc.
Huh. Mm.
I know.
Didn't know.
So that leaves us with whiskey as the drink of the nation at this point.
I feel so American when I drink it.
Thank you.
Don't get too excited.
You're such a patriot, Elizabeth.
Thank you for finishing my that whiskey
service.
Well, I usually drink rum, so I guess I'm a rebel.
Well, no, you're not a rebel. You are a loyalist to the British crown. So fuck you.
Sorry. I don't like whiskey.
Washington's worried about how to pay back our national debt from the war. So this is likely one of the last times an American president cared about the national debt. So we're going to talk about it for a second. The federal government owed $54 million to different allies from the war, which is a little less than $1.5 billion in today's money. The state's governments owed an additional $25 million, which is about $689 million in today's dollars. So we owed a fuck ton, not as much as we owe now, but
yeah,
still,
we're in
it's
how
not
many
great.
Trillion?
Yeah, I had a lot of issues with like converting decimals and that kind of stuff too with this. This was a very taxing segment.
Converting decimal. Oh, Jesus. Why are you just put it into like an inflation calculator?
I did, but then you have to count like the groups of three zeros and I confused billions and trillions.
Were you having like elementary school trauma?
I really was, you guys.
So your problem was just reading the numbers, what you're saying. It's not like you were doing math. You just couldn't figure out how to read the number.
You know what? I'm doing the Lord's work right now, and I would appreciate you keeping your sass to a minimum. Okay.
Just taxing my patience.
Ha tax. So Washington decides to pass what became known colloquially as the whiskey tax. The tax technically applied to all distilled spirits, but nobody cared about the other ones for the reasons that I already described.
Nobody was producing or distributing the other spirits.
Right. Not to any like large.
Not real Americans.
Yeah, exactly. So this was the first domestic product tax from the new government. So that, you know, it's kind of a big deal. So there are two ways that people could pay the tax. Either a flat fee of 6 cents or 9 cents per gallon. So there are two sides to this argument. The American citizens are like, literally, we just fought a war over taxation less than a decade ago. Like, what the fuck? This is another example of like taxation without representation, hashtag DC statehood. And at this time on the frontier, farmers were using whiskey as like a form of currency, because they could easily make it out of like the surplus crops like barley and rye. So they're like, yeah, you're cutting into my cash. I don't like this. So the government on the other side was like, this is a legal expression of Congress's taxation power, which was given to us by the new U.S. Constitution. Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton, he
never
reasons
heard
that,
of him.
I know. That because whiskey is a quote, luxury item, which I wrote in my notes, wait for Liz to disagree with this.
It is an essential.
So because whiskey is a luxury item, this is the least objectionable tax to excise because people don't, quote, need it. Also, the government was like, it's a sin tax, as in two words, not syntax like the way that you describe something, but like syntax.
S-I-N,
like sin,
not S-Y-N.
Tax. Yeah. That will bring the public's attention to the negative effects of alcohol use. Yeah, okay. Let's move on to the rebellion, which goes from 1791 to 1793. So the Westerners are pissed. So not only are they losing a supplemental source of income, but since it's incredibly popular in their area, they feel targeted. Now, when I talk about the West, I'm talking about like Pennsylvania, Indiana, like those are the quote Western states.
Anything west at that time, yeah.
Right.
I feel like I now understand where Tracy gets it from when she's always like, this feels targeted.
It's well, I even wrote PA this thing. Example. Like, if pineapples became illegal, Hawaii would not be pleased. I think that's a flawless example. No notes. So whiskey was easier to transport over the Appalachian Mountains than like giant barrels of grain. So it makes the Western farmers feel less competitive than the Eastern grain producers. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the Westerners accuse Hamilton of playing favorites with the big business Eastern farmers and essentially giving like tax breaks to the Eastern distillers. Their arguments were that there was like a huge discrepancy in fees. Like the larger operations could afford the larger flat fee, which was offset by their larger volume and could get as low as 6 cents per gallon. Whereas the smaller distilleries usually paid the per gallon price because they weren't making that volume, which ended up costing more because of the difference in volume.
Yeah, why would they choose that?
Well, because they're not producing enough. So it's like the amount that you paid for the larger volume was larger, but when you distribute it among each gallon, it's cheaper.
Okay.
Math.
Problem with the lack of resources. Because whiskey was considerably cheaper in the cash-poor Western frontier at that time than in the more populous, like, Eastern cities. And this meant that even if everyone paid the same tax, the percentage of the total revenue that tax accounted for would be much larger and therefore cut much deeper for the Western state. There's also the punishment, because all the stills had to be registered, and breaking that law was a federal matter instead of a local one. So if you broke that law, you had to travel to the capital, which was in Philadelphia at the time, which is obviously a lot closer to the Eastern states than those of the Western states.
Yeah.
So there are all these problems, and the Western states are pissed off. So Western Pennsylvanians decide to organize and advocate to repeal the law because they are good Americans. Specific pissed off counties include Allegheny, which is home to Pittsburgh, Fayette, which is an hour southeast of Pittsburgh, Washington, which is 40 minutes southwest of Pittsburgh, and Westmoreland, which is an hour east by southeast of Pittsburgh. So it's basically the entirety of Southwest PA.
Just that like quarter of the country or the state.
Well, Pennsylvania is a notoriously large state.
Yeah.
Notoriously.
Notorious. So they decide to meet in Pittsburgh in September of 1791. So this is 6 months after the tax is enacted. They sent a petition to both the PA Assembly and the U.S. House of Representatives, both of which, as a reminder, are located in Philadelphia. This was their attempt to avoid violence, but it definitely didn't work. There are tons of examples, but like one is like an appointed tax collector, Robert Johnson, was literally tarred and feathered in Washington County. When the government sent someone to serve warrants to his attackers, they whipped, tarred, and feathered that guy too.
Jeez.
The messenger.
And then needless to say, the attackers were never arrested and the taxes weren't collected from September 1791 to May 1792, because everyone was afraid of getting tarred and feathered.
Like, it sounds like a ridiculous thing to get tarred and feathered, but isn't that extremely dangerous? Like, is the tar, like, hot? Like, can't that really be dangerous?
I mean, I didn't look into the mechanics of that,
yes,
but
that's why they're doing it to you.
Yeah, I would assume it's not pleasant.
Right, but I feel like it just, like, could scald you. Like, seems like it'd be, like, an embarrassing thing to be covered in feathers, but, like, I feel like it could also be very dangerous.
I don't think embarrassment is what they go for.
The feather seems like an embarrassing tip.
Yeah, the feathers are just yeah, to piss but you I off. Think
the feathers are for funsies.
The feathers are just like colonial glitter. Like, it just gets everywhere, you know? Okay.
Colonial glitter.
Right? Like, that's kind of what it is. All right, so they saw some moderate success in that the law was modified in May 1792. So this is like 8 months after they had this assembly. So the tax was reduced by 1 cent, which is a difference of 27 cents today. But the Pennsylvanians were, like, frankly, kind of insulted. Like, really? That's what you're going to give us? Like, fuck you. So they decide to meet in Pittsburgh again in 1792, August of 1792. So everyone's a little more emotional at this point. And there was this militant group called the Mingo Creek Association. There is no Mingo Creek. I don't know what that's about, but whatever. The Mingo Creek Association commandeers the meeting. So at the meeting, they raised liberty poles, which are actually just poles with nightcaps on them that apparently symbolize freedom, question mark, exclamation point. I don't know.
So literal. It's a liberty pole?
That's literal. It's called a liberty pole. And apparently this was a tradition from, like, the Revolutionary War.
Sure.
I don't know.
It must have some meaning in its origin that we just don't know.
I tried to look it up and I didn't find anything beyond that. So, right. Listeners, get at us if you know the origin of liberty poles, because I could not find it. They formed a committee of correspondence, which is basically a fucking shadow government. They created an extra legal court and discouraged suits for tax collection and foreclosure. So they're like, in our court of law, you cannot sue to collect your taxes.
That's how that works.
Yep. So outside of the meeting, like, from that point on, the Mingo Creek Association intimidated anyone complying with the whiskey tax. So there would be anonymous notes or notes signed, quote, Tom the Tinker, don't know where they got that, threatening those that were complying in newspapers throughout the region. So they would submit these notes and, like, threaten anyone who was, like, known to be complying with the whiskey tax. And this association would also burn down bars and distilleries that were paying their taxes.
They either get in trouble with the real government or they get in trouble with the shadow government.
That is,
like,
correct,
what's the incentive to follow and not the other?
Frankly, I would roll the dice with the real government because, like, if you don't go to Philadelphia, what are they going to do? Like, you live hundreds of miles away. Whereas,
I would also hope that they might be more willing to, like, protect me. You know, like, look at me, I'm doing my duty.
I mean, I don't know if I would trust the government that much.
Probably just more of who you fear war.
Well, yeah, and I would fear the Mingo Creek Association, honestly. They're burning down my shit.
Yeah, kind of agree with that.
Tax collectors are essentially run out of Western PA at this point. Hamilton views this second convention as a threat to the Republic. So he sends this Pennsylvanian tax official named George Clymer to Western PA to investigate what's going on. So Clymer is a bit of a character, and he decides the best way to go investigate this is to go full undercover and invest in a super clumsy disguise. Like, think Groucho Marx, like, mustache, essentially.
I feel like what passed for disguises back in the day, just, like, were people so easily fooled?
I mean,
the way, like, men dressed as women and, like,
well, also, I feel like people's faces...
How convincing were they?
Well, I mean, people's faces weren't as well known as they are now because we don't have, like, the internet and TV.
But I just feel like if somebody were wearing, like, those classic, like, fake nose and mustache things, like, that's what it sounds like. It doesn't sound like these are, like, state-of-the-art, you know, disguises that people could wear. Like, if they were wearing something that clearly did not belong on their, like, face... It just seems a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
If his face wasn't well known, why would he need to disguise himself to begin with?
Well, he's a tax collector, so everyone kind of knows who he is because he's from Pennsylvania.
What's his disguise?
Maybe they've seen, like, drawn pictures of him or something, so he needs to change his appearance just enough so he doesn't fit that description anymore or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm glad we're speculating on this, though.
Yes.
So he also tries to intimidate local officials in his disguise. So he's obviously unmasked and gets caught super quickly.
Well, they weren't that easily fooled, Liz.
No.
As it turns out. There's my explanation.
So Clymer is super butthurt that his clever disguise didn't work. So he goes back to Hamilton and totally blows everything out of proportion. And then oh my God, I think I was hungry at the time because I wrote, maybe he was just hungry? I don't know.
Tracy's projecting.
I totally projecting at that point.
He lost focus because he was hungry.
I think that's a really reasonable assumption.
Through a tantrum.
And then he got a tummy ache.
I mean, no intel on how quickly he ate said food. Washington and Hamilton are particularly pissed off that Pennsylvania is causing all this trouble because it's the home of their, you know, then capital city, Philadelphia. So, you know, it's not a good PR look.
Yeah.
So was Philadelphia part of the state? It wasn't its own, like how DC is, like, you know, DC is not associated with any state.
No, that's on the other side of the state. So Philly is nowhere near
Pittsburgh
at this point.
Right.
So it's on the other side, but they're like, dude, why is Pennsylvania giving us trouble? We all fucking work here. Like, get it together. Hamilton drafts a presidential proclamation denouncing the resistance. After some toning down of the language, Washington signs it in September 1792, and the proclamation is published nationwide. And it's like, Pennsylvania's being bad. Don't talk to Pennsylvania. They are bad examples.
Pennsylvania's in timeout.
And think about what you did.
Pennsylvania's in timeout with a dunce cap on.
But just Western Pennsylvania. Eastern Pennsylvania is okay.
Yeah.
So this proclamation does not stop the violence in Western PA.
Shocking.
I know, right? In June of 1793, federal tax inspector John Neville is burned in effigy by a crowd of 100 people in Washington County. So they're just like, watch, like, this is entertainment for them now. Like, burning tax collectors.
Jesus.
That November 1793, men break into the home of tax collector Benjamin Wells in Fayette County, and they force him to give up his position at gunpoint. They're never found, even though President Washington offered a sizable reward for their arrest.
Not enough to make up for the taxes.
Not enough. Mm. Now there's a fucking insurrection. We're now in 1794. May of 1794, subpoenas go out to Western Pennsylvanians for non-compliance with the tax law, summoning them to Philadelphia. And so that's basically the last straw. Everyone's pissed. Emotions boil over. The Battle of Bower Hill. Let's fast forward to July 15th, 1794. So 2 months later, the government officials are delivering subpoenas to Western Pennsylvanians because, you know, it takes 2 months to get there because it's 1794.
Yes.
Shots are fired while the officials try to deliver subpoenas about 10 miles south of Pittsburgh. The rebels are now commanded by Major James McFarland, who's famous because he was like really important in the Revolutionary War, apparently. 600 rebels show up to take down the government officials that are trapped inside the farmhouse on this property where, like, the shots are fired. The officials in the farmhouse are like, all right, let's wave a white flag of surrender. They do that. McFarland is like, guys, they're surrendering. Let's declare a ceasefire. So as he steps into the open to go, like, negotiate the ceasefire, the officials inside open fire and mortally wound him. And that's such a dick move. Like, you don't do that. So
whiskey dicks.
I know.
Whiskey dick move.
So then the rebels set fire to the farmhouse and took the survivors as prisoners. Because you deserve it. You are liars.
Liar, liar. Farmhouse on fire.
Yup. So then they have a march on Pittsburgh, which takes place August 1st. So like 2 weeks later. The public is enraged by McFarland's death, justifiably, I might add. So 7,000 rebels gather at Braddock's Hill, which is about 15 minutes outside of Pittsburgh. And everyone is so pissed that they even I did not know this, and I think it's amazing. So everyone's so pissed that they talked about seceding from the Union and joining Spain or England.
England? You just left England.
Right.
You just left.
Pittsburgh, what the fuck are you doing?
Oh,
they even designed a flag for their, quote, new nation. The flag had 6 stripes, 1 for each county in the rebellion, which is Allegheny, Bedford, Fayette, Washington, Westmoreland, and what is present-day Virginia's Ohio County. So, yeah, Pittsburgh tried to secede from the Union, question mark. In the end, they ended up just defiantly marching into Pittsburgh. So nobody seceded from anything. Fast forward another 2 weeks, we're at what's known today as Whiskey Point. 226 whiskey rebels from the 6 counties met to delegate peace negotiators to go east to Philly to talk to President Washington to, like, negotiate terms. Meanwhile, the federal officials in Philly are pushing for Washington to use force to suppress the rebellion. So Hamilton is writing articles for the newspaper under a pseudonym. The pseudonym is Tully, by the way. He's denouncing the uprising. He's just, like, making it look like this is the worst idea. Washington ends up signing an order to send militia into Western PA on August 7th, and he gives the rebels until September 1st to disband their ranks, because, you know, shit moves slowly. It's 1794.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The negotiations took place in Philly between the rebels and the U.S. government over about a month long. So, like, from August 15th or so to September, like, late September. So, September 24th, Washington received a recommendation from the commissioners that, in their judgment, quote, it was necessary that the civil authorities should be aided by a military force in order to secure a due execution of the laws. So, like, basically, you need to send the military in. The next day, September 25th, Washington issued a proclamation summoning the state militias of New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Virginia to go into service against the rebels. So there's about 13,000 men between these state militias. And so they're going to go, like, fight the Western Pennsylvanians. So Washington himself led the troops toward the battlefield, which he's the only sitting president ever to do that.
Over whiskey.
Well, because priorities. He hands over command to Virginia Governor and Major General Henry Lee when he's satisfied that the federal troops are not going to lose. As a reminder, there are 7,000 rebel troops and 13,000 government troops. So it's nearly 2-1 at this point. The massive show of force by the federal army is enough to quell the rebellion in October 1794. Like, nobody even fights because they're like, oh shit, 2-1. Like, we're done.
Yeah.
Whiskey's not worth it.
We're done fucked.
Yeah.
That's where I dispute. Whiskey is worth it.
All right.
Stand up for yourselves,
can't
men.
Can't drink whiskey if you're dead.
That's true. So there are only 2 rebels who are captured and convicted of treason in Philly later that year. Everybody else just disbands, except for, like, these 2 random guys.
Imagine being those 2 men that take the fall for the whole thing.
Like, what the fuck?
Literally. Yeah.
What about all these other fuckers behind me? Like, why me?
Yeah, I don't know if they, like, had a broken foot and couldn't run or, like,
it's like
some
when
shit
you're
like that.
On a highway and everyone's speeding, but you get pulled over. You're like, what the fuck?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Keeping up with traffic.
So there are 2 guys who are captured and convicted of treason, and they're scheduled to be executed. And Washington ends up pardoning both of them before their execution dates. And he says, quote, the misled have abandoned their errors. For though I shall always think it a sacred duty to exercise with firmness and energy the constitutional powers with which I am vested, yet it appears to me no less consistent with the public good than it is with my personal feelings to mingle in the operations of government every degree of moderation and tenderness while the national justice, dignity, and safety may permit. So he's like, it's not worth it. This is done. Let's just not kill these dudes.
That's the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah. So even though the whiskey rebellion is over, the opposition to the whiskey tax continued past this insurrection. So the Western Pennsylvanian rebels and those who sympathize with them voted Thomas Jefferson into the presidency in 1800, aided by Hamilton in an effort to defeat his longtime rival, Aaron Burr, quote, with his own faction, unquote. So Hamilton ends up like fucking up his own whiskey tax by electing Thomas Jefferson, which is hilarious. So the tax is gone by 1802. 2 years later, it's gone. So for the next decade, the U.S. relied on solely import tariffs for revenue. And that is the story of how Western Pennsylvanians changed the course of the United States of America. Alleluia. Amen.
Thank you, Western PA.
You're welcome.
The Canadian cartel. Steph guessed it earlier, slash I gave it away at some point in a different recording.
Womp womp.
Talking about syrup.
I thought the previous recording is what gave you the idea to do it.
It's a chicken or the egg situation.
Yeah, well, it's I had heard this a long time ago, and something in a previous recording like triggered me to add it to the
list. And you're like, oh, so I think that's a thing. I should do that sometime.
Yeah. So, back in the 60s, maple syrup producers in Quebec participated in a joint plan to collectively market maple syrup. So, all of the syrup producers, they're like independent companies. They produce their own syrup, like they have their own farms and crops and everything. But they decide to band together to market and sell their syrup together. They were doing this because syrup was an unreliable market. It was really difficult to make a steady living off of it because, like, sometimes it's just like any sort of crop. Like, what if you have a good year or a bad year? How do you get through that?
Mm-hmm.
So what they wanted to do was come together and sort of like form a little pact that would help protect them through their like bad seasons. They formed the Federation of Quebec Maple Syrup Producers, which I'm sure is actually maybe not even in English because like it's probably French because the abbreviation does not match up with.
I was going to say it's an excellent abbreviation because I'm very excited.
It's probably like Fédération Producers something. I don't know where the maple is near, but their acronym is FPAQ. Which is Federation of Quebec Maple Syrup Producers. I'm just going to call them the Federation.
It's the Federation. It sounds like the like enemy forces in some sci-fi book or something. The Federation.
It sounds like the Star Wars thing. Like,
yeah, or that.
I mean, they kind of developed that reputation and we'll get there.
Oh, amazing. I really want pancakes. No, waffles. I want waffles.
The little pockets for the butter.
Oh my God. I want it right now.
This agreement to make the Federation is really important because what they want to do is they essentially want to control supply and demand of syrup in the maple market. You know, before the Federation, you just have these producers make their syrup and then they are selling it in competition with other producers. If you're trying to independently manage your like long-term production and sale goals, you're not going to get very far if other people are not on the same page as you are. So if you're like, oh, I had a really good year this year, I'm going to only sell some of my syrup and save the rest for another year when maybe like I have a bad year. I want to make sure that I have syrup to sell. Like that's going to work against you if your neighbor who also had a good year is just flooding the market with all of their syrup. So it's like driving prices down. And so you really need to be on the same page if you want to sort of manipulate the market so that you have more stability in the longer term.
Okay.
So they have to come together on this agreement. And this is where the Federation comes in. So the Federation subjects its members to quotas. If you are a bulk producer of maple syrup in Quebec, you don't have a choice. You can't just like, no thanks, and opt out. You are a member of the Federation and you have to give your harvest over to them. So the Federation comes, they inspect your crops, they taste your syrup, and then they grade the syrup. So, you know, syrup has grades like amber, blah, blah, blah. They inspect your syrup, and then they take it from you. And so the Federation decides how much to sell and how much to put in reserve.
Is it like a percentage?
Yes, you get like you get paid, but you're also kind of paying them to do this service for you.
Whether you want them to or not.
Yeah. If you're just like a little like farmer's market producer, like you just are a hobbyist sort of producer and you sell like maybe locally in your community, I don't think
a hobby syrupist.
Yeah.
I dabble in syrup.
Oh my God. Yes.
Not professional syrupist. I dabble.
I just dabble.
Yeah. I don't know what the threshold is, but it's for quote bulk producers.
Okay.
Are forced into the Federation. You don't have to worry about like selling the product yourself, but you also just after you produce it, you don't have control over it anymore. You just give it up. You get paid a share of like that year's sales, but the Federation cuts a profit. So you're kind of paying them to sell your product for you.
So you're outsourcing, essentially.
Yeah. And it just kind of like homogenizes all of the syrup producers across Quebec. So they're all doing this. All the bulk producers are doing this. And so like, so it doesn't get sold as like, you know, Tracy's maple syrup and Liz's maple syrup. It's just like authentic Quebec maple syrup. Like, cause it all just goes to like into the same market.
Gotcha. Okay. So there's like no brands per se. It's all just the same.
Yeah. As I said, they have quotas. You have to give them your harvest. They take a cut of the profits. This is essentially how a cartel operates. And this is legal in many countries, but it carries a very negative connotation because of things like drug cartels. The difference between a cartel and a monopoly. So a monopoly is one company dominating the market. And a cartel is multiple companies colluding together to limit additional competition. So these, like all of these producers are still like kind of independent manufacturers of syrup, but they're colluding together to like dominate the global market so that the like American cartel can't compete against them. We don't have one. That was just a poor example.
Okay.
Okay.
The reason why this is so effective is because Quebec has 70% of the world's maple syrup supply. So it's 70? Very easy Jesus. For them to control the market. Yeah. So you're just like, you know, you're not very big news if you're in the other 30%. So you can't, like, you don't have as much influence over how much supply is available globally and then therefore what its value is. So really, Quebec, this federation with 70% of the world supply of maple syrup, it's basically they're the ones who are able to say, this is how much syrup is available to buy this year and therefore this is what it costs. Like, they can control that. As I mentioned, excess syrup is put into a reserve. And this is known as the International Strategic Reserve. It's not stored in one place because, like, you don't just, you know, put everything together in case there was something catastrophic that happened to it.
Don't put all your syrup in one basket.
No. Can't do it.
It's actually distributed across a number of warehouses in little towns around Quebec. We kind of have the same thing, like, America has a petroleum reserve, which we have for cases of emergency, like if there's suddenly an oil embargo or if there's a nuclear war or something happens, we have this emergency supply of petroleum. And so it sounds kind of silly when you compare that to like Canada having
maple
a syrup reserve, but yeah. That's where the money is.
Canadians need their syrup, man.
Yeah. Around 2012, a barrel of maple syrup was worth up to 25 times more than a barrel of crude oil.
Damn.
And oil is expensive, so yeah. You can imagine.
I mean, that's where my priorities lie. I just didn't think that like everyone agreed with me, but
Canada does.
Yeah.
This reserve is just essentially like maple syrup in Canada. It's liquid gold. It's really expensive. And so that's why they have to go to these great lengths to control and protect it. So the reserve is designed to be a source of maple syrup during like bad seasons or off years where the producers have a really low output. They still have this extra syrup that they have on hand to put onto the global market.
Do they say on there like age, how many years, like they do for wines? What vintage is this syrup?
I don't know if aging impacts the syrup. They're stored in, I forget what the material is, but it's not like a wood barrel, like how you age, you know, wines or spirits. Mm-hmm. So it's not like this was aged in cask. Like they're just, they're kind of like oil barrels. Like they're just aluminum or steel, some sort of metal. So I don't think that they age when they're stored. So in 2011, Canada had a bumper year. So this was like a really good year of surplus syrup. And they had so much extra syrup that the Federation was forced to rent an additional warehouse. So they were like running out of warehouse storage for all of their syrup. They rent space from an additional warehouse with minimal security, no cameras, no alarms. They say they couldn't have imagined someone wanting to steal maple syrup, which rings a bell. That's what they said about Abe Lincoln's body, too.
I mean, I do right now, so I can imagine.
I mean, when it's like, apparently it's worth a lot. Why would you not think someone would want to steal that?
The only reason I wouldn't steal it is if I couldn't find a waffle large enough to eat it on.
There's a waffle reserve down the road.
It's called the Waffle House.
Oh my God.
People are waiting there.
I would wait at the Waffle House with my
barrel of syrup.
Reserve of syrup, or I mean, that's why he's still waiting there.
Endless supply of delicious liquid gold.
Oh my God, I'm looking right now at delivery of IHOP.
Later on in 2011 and into 2012, a group of thieves see an opportunity. They rent space out from the same warehouse. So the warehouse isn't just like the Federation's warehouse. It's just like a large industrial space and they're renting a portion of it. So these group of people rent space from the same warehouse. This was to sort of give them like an alibi or like a purpose for needing to be there so that it wasn't suspicious that they were coming and going all the time. It was just like, you know, we have a business here too. It's fine. And they would take syrup barrels from the warehouse a few at a time, and they would truck them over to their own sugar shacks, where they would then like siphon the syrup out like you would like siphon gas out of a car. Like they would just like siphon out the syrup into their own barrels and then refill the barrels with water and bring it back to the warehouse.
And no one saw them doing this.
Right. So then they would move the maple syrup out of Quebec, where it was easier to sell, away from the watchful eye of the Federation. So primarily, they would move the syrup to Vermont and to New Brunswick, where it was trafficked in smaller batches to reduce suspicion. So they like divvied it up and sold it inconspicuously to reduce suspicion. Like it would be really weird if they just like showed up with like barrels and barrels and barrels of syrup that obviously came from a producer. They typically sold to legitimate distributors who were unaware of the scheme. So these people that were buying the stolen syrup were innocent. They allegedly didn't know that, you know, this was stolen goods.
You wouldn't assume that it was illegal.
I don't know. There's a black market for maple syrup. So like maybe you should be questioning where your syrup comes from.
Black market for maple syrup.
I mean, I want to be a part of it. Yeah. I want to be where the syrup is.
She's back.
I want to be put it on my waffles.
So over the course of almost a year, this group stole 9,571 barrels of syrup, which is 12% of the total reserve. So that's a pretty good chunk.
And were they just like not checking in on this reserve to the point that
we'll
they didn't notice
there.
This?
We'll okay. Get there.
Well, it's been a year and they haven't noticed.
These barrels had an estimated street value of 13 to 18 million US dollars.
Stop it.
What?
Stop it. That's not a thing.
Street value of maple syrup.
I mean, I love it.
You think like black market, you think like stolen art and jewelry, drugs, organs, not syrup.
I mean, you
it's
know?
Where the money is. Follow the money.
Is it cheaper for the consumer on the black market?
I don't know if it matters much to the consumer.
Yeah, because like, why would someone buy black market maple syrup when you can just go to the grocery store and get regular maple syrup?
They don't know it's black market. Like, the what maybe part of being really good in the black market is that you can, like, on the sly, get your products out into a legal market.
Gotcha.
And they don't even know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So nobody was going out saying, God, I want Steph. To buy black market syrup. Just the black market was pushing it on them. And they were like, oh, you know, yeah, sure. Syrup. Cool.
Oh, yeah. Syrup. Cool.
And they might have been, I don't know the details really, but like maybe they were going to just like putting up little tents in farmers markets and being like,
that's true.
This is syrup, you know, and people aren't going to question where that comes from. They're just like, it's authentic Canadian maple syrup. That's awesome. With the value being at upwards of $18 million, this made the maple syrup heist one of the greatest heists in Canadian history and one of the greatest agricultural crimes of all time.
I didn't know there were agricultural crimes.
I would argue that the Whiskey Rebellion could be one of them.
Oh, you're so right.
It's blew Tracy's mind.
Thanks for joining our themed segment, Steph.
Oh, Jesus. No one ever tells me when there's a theme.
We don't know either.
We don't know.
Again, my topic is very far off.
The operation ran pretty smoothly for about a year until things fell apart in July 2012. So to get to the question you asked earlier, Steph, nobody noticed that this was happening because they weren't pulling maple yet. Like, this was a bumper year where they were creating a reserve, essentially. So they're just loading and loading and loading all of this syrup into the warehouse, and they haven't needed to take any out yet, right? Mm. Like, we haven't had a bad year or a bad season, so there's been no need to pull
tap into
from
the reserve.
Yeah.
That's happened.
Yeah, they wouldn't know that this was happening until they do their yearly inspection. So that's how they've been able to get by for so long. But now in July 2012, it's time for the Federation to do an inventory of their warehouses. So they have an inspector come by, and part of the inventory requires climbing over the stacks of barrels. The barrels are just stacked like aisles and aisles and aisles and rows and rows and rows. Think of just like a Costco warehouse stacked to the ceiling with barrels of syrup. I guess they just like climb on top of the barrels to make sure that like all of the stacks are full or something. I don't know. But so this guy is climbing over barrels that when they're filled would weigh about 600 pounds. So they're very stable. Like they're not going to wobble when you're climbing over them. But he's climbing on a stack and one of them falls over. He discovers that it's empty. And so suspicious, he checks around.
I thought they were filled with water.
Well, they got lazy. They got a little comfortable and a little lazy, and they had stopped refilling the barrels with water. I don't know if they realized that. I don't know if they didn't know that there were like annual inventories or something. And so maybe after a few months, they were like, wow, we're not getting caught yet, or nobody's noticed. Like, let's cut out these steps and we can do even more. I don't know. It's never explained why they
don't get sloppy. That's like the number one rule.
So the water wouldn't evaporate from these, right? Because they're sealed barrels.
Yeah, they're sealed. They wouldn't be as heavy because the water wouldn't be as dense as the syrup is,
right.
But it would be a substantial enough weight that it could have been not noticed.
Right.
And then in that case, they would never have known until they actually
if the barrel weighs 600 pounds, no one's picking it up on their own.
Filled.
Right, so if it was a 600-pound thing of syrup versus a 400-pound thing of water, like, either way, man could pick that up. You're not going to notice the difference.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so it would have been negligible. But they got lazy, and they didn't fill it at all, so they toppled right over.
Yeah, that's noticeable.
Yep, so they launch a massive investigation, and later on in 2012, a dozen people were arrested. So, getting into the players... The most prominent sentence was given to Richard Valliere, who was sentenced to 8 years in prison and a $9.4 million fine, with an extension up to 14 years if he didn't pay the fine.
Damn.
It's no bueno.
He was the accused ringleader of the operation, and he was known as a, quote, barrel roller on the black market.
It sounds more badass than it is.
It's really not. Like,
so he had been operating on the maple syrup black market for 10 years before this. Just made a career out of buying and selling syrup directly from producers and bypassing the Federation. So like producers would lie about how much they had produced that year. And so like give the Federation fake numbers and, you know, give them that part of their products, but then like save a chunk for black market sellers to distribute in other markets where they could split it up and get more money. So that way they could get more money from their products because they weren't paying the Federation. They're like,
so some of the distributors were privy to what was going on then.
Some of the distributors, I'm not aware of distributors knowing about this particular scheme to like steal syrup directly from the reserve, some producers were part of other aspects of the maple syrup black market where they would just have people
give them some and underreport their amounts.
So they would pay less for these people to like smuggle their syrup than they were paying for the Federation to distribute it. So Richard's father was also part of the crew. His name was Raymond, and he was convicted for possession of syrup.
Amazing. Take me to prison.
I'm sure it wasn't possession of syrup. It was like possession of illegally distributed stolen property.
They had sticky fingers.
I hate you.
My alternate teaser for this was going to be a sticky situation.
That could have been anything.
Yeah. There was also Etienne Saint-Pierre. He was a New Brunswick-based syrup reseller. So he would receive the stolen syrup and resell it. Avic Caron, he was considered the instigator. So this is an interesting...
Of course, the instigator is named Karen.
It's C-A-R-O-N.
Amazing.
But he was the husband. So his wife was an owner of the warehouse. So as I mentioned earlier, the Federation didn't own the warehouse. They rented part of the warehouse for their reserve. And so this dude's wife was one of the owners of the warehouse. And so she must have like mentioned one day, like, oh, we just got a new contract to rent part of our space to the Maple Syrup Federation. And so her husband was like, ooh, there could be an opportunity for me here. So that's possibly how they were able to rent their own space and get access to the Federation's space by having this insider, essentially. As I mentioned earlier, Richard was the ringleader. Like, I don't think this dude had like his own connections in the black market for maple syrup. So he just had the idea and then he found the people to make it happen. So he was sentenced to 5 years in prison plus a $1.2 million fine. And then lastly, at least of the short list I have, there were about a half a dozen others as well. But Sebastian Joutras, it was the transporter. And he was a trucker that would transport the stolen syrup to the other markets. And he served 8 months in prison. So at the time of the investigation, most of the stolen syrup had already made its way into the legal syrup market. So, like,
I thought you were going to say the tummies of consumers.
Yes.
Yeah.
That too.
Into Tracy's.
Into my mouth. Nooks.
Yes.
So they weren't able to retrieve most of the syrup. The thieves probably still considered their mission a success because their goal was essentially just to get back at the Federation. And so even though they were caught, they still like robbed the Federation of a lot of money that they're not getting back. And so one of the reasons the Federation was unpopular, as I mentioned, they had like really high fees and you were forced into it. Like you couldn't just opt out if you were both producer. So they were very controlling. And even though they offered long-term stability to maple producers, there were still a lot of cons. And I think maple syrup producers still wished to have a little bit more independence and control over their product, especially if you were like one of the smaller bulk producers. So one of the producers who had recently defied the cartel described them as a mafia.
Syrup mafia.
Yeah. They said they tried to seize my syrup. I had to move the product into New Brunswick at night. This year, they hit me with an injunction.
Oh, boy.
This is very cartel-like behavior, like, oh, I hear you're producing this product. That's real nice. It's mine now. And, like, we'll let you keep some of the money, but, like, you just don't get to control it. We get to control it. So one of the thieves justified the mission by saying that stealing from thieves is not stealing. So that's how a lot of maple syrup producers see the Federation as
eye for an eye.
Like their product is being taken from them and they're losing out on it. So in the aftermath of the heist, the Federation has come under a lot of fire for the unfair way it operates. Again, it is like technically legal in Canada to have, you know, this kind of Federation, but I think that they were taking a closer look at maybe how strict their policies are to be a little bit more fair to the syrup producers. So Quebec's Minister of Agriculture commissioned a report which called on the Federation to scrap its quotas and relax its regulations. So I don't really know what this means. Like, is can you like voluntarily participate in it? Or is it just like lower fees to be involved? I'm not really sure. But they were instructed to change their ways. And since the early 2000s, Quebec has actually experienced the slowest growth in maple syrup production of anywhere in North America.
We'll stop being a dick, Quebec.
Yeah. The fastest growing comes from the state of Vermont.
America! America! Remember when we did the, we went to the maple syrup houses when we went to Vermont.
Yeah.
And ate maple syrup candies and tried different maple syrups. So good.
Ugh.
So good.
So buy authentic syrup, but not from Quebec.
Okay. Quebec is on the shit list.
I'm going to start my segment by reading you guys a letter.
Okay.
Hello, my loves. I am Mother God.
Hi.
Hey. Whenever it's all caps, I'm going to scream it, okay?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I was like, did Oliver just spill water?
Mother God! I'm terrified.
For quite some time, you had been praying that I come back to help you. Because of that, I had enough of the dark forces kidnapping. I'd like to point out there's one P in kidnapping.
Sure. Kidnapping.
Kidnapping.
My planet and my children. So here I am in the flesh.
Stop.
That was all one sentence, by the way.
Of course.
I was born on November 30th, 1975 in Kansas, USA. This is my 534th reincarnation in my quest to recover my beloved planet, the center of the universe, and the first planet I created. They tried to assassinate me 589 times this lifetime, but love has won. I love you.
I don't like this.
I've done my part, and now you have to get a move on because you've wasted eons thinking you had a life under the manipulation of the cabal who used you like cattle. All right, getting a little accusatory there, God.
Yeah, Jesus.
Get a move on because this planet is ascending and you need to reconnect with Prime Source Creator, me! So that you can ignite your light bodies and can protect you again. That doesn't even make sense.
No.
You are either with me or against me. The experiment of free will has been declared a failure. It is void.
Oh. All of it?
The whole you're either with me or against me is so manipulative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is toxic language right there.
Yeah. I mean, are we talking about this like it's a valid thing right now? Like, let's.
It is void. Everything exists. Sure. Under divine will once more. Thank God! LOL!
Wait, what?
LOL?
Yeah,
what?
I thought you said 19... Oh, they were born in 1975. It wasn't written in 1975.
Correct.
Thank God. LOL was not a thing. This is fake news stuff.
Get a move on, Mother God. This was taken from the website of a cult known as Love Has Won. Which sounds very loving.
I do not feel embraced by love.
Is that written to just like the people?
Yes, that is like when you go to the website for Love Is One and you go to like About Mom, that is like what it
About Mom.
Like, oh my God. What? Oh, no. So it's a cult based in Creston, Colorado. I'm not sure where exactly that is in Colorado.
I do not know either, but I'm going to go there.
And it is led by a 44-year-old woman named Amy Carlson, who refers to herself as God and Mom.
Sure.
She also goes by Mother God, Mother Gaia, Great Spirit, and White Buffalo Calf Woman.
I know what this is.
Do you?
Oh.
Mother Gaia?
She a friend of yours?
She's my bestie. I go to Creston, Colorado all the time to hang out with Mother Gaia.
So as you may have gathered from the letter, she claims to be the physical reincarnation of God on Earth.
Sure.
She says people begged her to return to Earth, so she finally did come back. But she says that in order to put herself into a physical vessel, she had to undergo voluntary amnesia. And so in her human life, she had to rediscover who she was.
Sure.
So she couldn't bring like her
wisdom
old
with her
memories. That's what does that
I don't,
mean?
I don't know.
She knows that she's been reincarnated a bunch
now
of times.
She does, but okay. When she was growing up,
she has to like grow
she
into
figured
that,
it out. Oh, yeah,
she had to unlock the truth.
Exactly. Mm-hmm, before she rediscovered that she was God, she was a McDonald's manager.
As all good goddesses are,
doing God's work.
Yep. I think one of my new pandemic goals is to discover that I am God.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that on my to-do list.
Ooh, put it on your vision board.
Figure it out. The basic beliefs of this cult, the main thing is that Mom is God and that the overall goal in life is ascension. But I'm going to read you a blurb from Guru Magazine from July 2020, which kind of sums up their background better than I can. So, quote, thousands of years ago, Carlson was the queen of Lemuria, an ancient civilization here on Earth. Donald Trump was her father at the time.
That makes sense. It all comes together.
Yeah. Of course, they're fucking Trumpians. Atlanteans from Atlantis stole crystal technology from Lemuria, and after using it, the Earth exploded. The Earth was then taken over by Anunnakis and reptilians.
Sure.
It all comes back to the fucking reptoids, man.
Damn, they're everywhere.
The world is currently run by the evil 1% cabal, who are minions of these two groups. I thought the Earth exploded. How did someone take over the Earth?
Was the Earth reincarnated 500 times?
It just says the Earth exploded and then someone else took over. It doesn't even make sense.
Okay.
They are determined to keep the planet in a low vibration. 19 billion years ago, Amy Carlson and Father God, aka Jason Castillo, hatched a plan to save the universe from these dark forces and have been reincarnating on Earth ever since.
Sure.
Only those who come through Amy will be saved. And that is a quote from a summary from like one of her followers. Or I think ex-followers.
So how come we haven't heard of her? What iteration is this of her?
534th, I think she said.
So how come we don't have any records from 533 version of Amy out here trying to save us all?
I mean, had you heard of the 534th version until I just brought it up?
She's stealthy.
Maybe somebody knew about her. Yeah, I mean, it was... had to have been at least over 44 years ago because she's 44. So
I mean, I just don't understand her logic. I know there is no logic, but her logic in this.
I mean I don't know why we're trying to figure this out,
that she's saying 500 times over, you know, she's tried to save us and we've thwarted her, but like, where are the records of any of her last attempts? Shouldn't this be old news by now?
If you're asking for proof, I think you're going to be waiting for a long time. Do not hold your breath. Go sit in the Waffle House. It's going to be a while.
Oh my God, the Waffle House.
When I went to their website, there's like none of those beliefs that I just mentioned are actually spelled out anywhere on their website. Like the entire website is just about, like, it's that letter, and then it's all about products and courses that you can purchase products. From them.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I was just about to go pull up the website to look at it while you were talking, but then I remember what happened with Birds Aren't Real. And I'm just going to have, my Facebook's going to be flooded with these like, oh, you want to purchase whatever shit they're selling?
They do have merch.
Oh my God. What is it called? I'm going.
Love has won.
Do it. Bite the bullet.
Love has won. You will see when you go there, Elizabeth, that like different sections on the website, when you read through them, it just reads like this random stream of consciousness, like word vomit with random and inconsistent capitalizations, like typos galore, run-on sentences.
And if that's how the spirit moves her.
Exactly. And there's lots of just like buzzwords like ascension and cabal and whatever other random buzzwords she likes Amazing. To pick. So it'll just be like this stream of consciousness nonsense that actually isn't saying anything, but has a lot of like buzzwords. Are you looking at it right now?
Amazing.
Surprise, humanity. It's your mother and father God. Here, the physical on planet Earth equals heart.
Surprise.
Why does Earth equal heart?
Love. She loves Earth, duh.
I can only imagine that she wanted to put like a heart emoji. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't think we should try to imagine what she's thinking at all.
The website is kind of entertaining because it's just like mindless dribble. In some parts, like every single word is capitalized in the entire, like every sentence. It's just very bizarre. They post videos almost daily on social media, and I only was able to watch like one or two of these videos because it hurts my mind.
Oh, I just came across the page that says Mother God is calling all of her children home, and that such like Hill House vibes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That sounds like they're all going to be in a suicide pack.
Yeah,
maybe one
Mother
day.
God is calling all her children home, back to safety.
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Okay.
Amy.
Crane, whatever her,
Carlson.
The Hill House lady is.
Oh, yeah.
Olivia Crane? I don't remember. I'm still watching it. I don't know why. I can't remember.
So if you actually watch any of the videos that Amy posts, first of all, she's clearly intoxicated. Like, she's slurring. She's like, she's a hot mess in every video. And it's mostly her, or sometimes it's like her, the father, which is her flame twin, which we'll get to later what a flame twin is. It's just like them just like looking at the camera and just shouting angrily, like cursing, using that accusatory language, like you're with me or against me. And I mean, at one point, like the one video I watched, she like points at the camera and she's like, pretty much calls people who are against her fucking dick whores. Which is, you know, God's vocabulary seems to have changed a little bit from the Bible times. Like, the vocab is a little different.
She kind of sounds like Tiger King, except with a God complex instead of tigers.
She might be.
Like, she just does these videos all the time where she's really, like...
Yeah. It's kind of like that, but I think she's a little bit worse. Like, she's even angrier. Like, it's just her, like, scowling and screaming at the camera. Be like, you fucking dick whores.
Does God approve of that language?
She's Jesus. God.
Do you kiss your mother with that mouth, Mother God?
She's God. She can do what she wants.
And her texts, or her tweets, rather, are all kind of similar things. It'll be like, all caps, angry shouting, LOLs at the end. It's very bizarre. But for some reason, there are people who watch her angry, drunken train wreck videos and think, I want to get in on that.
Sign me up.
So how do you do that? How do you get involved? Well, she has a multitude of sessions that you can take part in. The most popular or most recommended one is the etheric surgery. Mom is a master surgeon and the greatest spiritual doctor of all creation. I mean, she is God, so obviously.
Sure.
She claims to have performed 75,000 sessions and millions of spiritual surgeries. Why would you need this surgery? Well, our minds have been ego-programmed. Ego stands for edging God out. Pretty much, it's humans have begun focusing on themselves over God. The ego-programmed mind is full of low vibration frequencies. There we go with the fucking vibrations again. That control arrogance, jealousy, laziness, apathy, etc. And it leads to war, conflict, imbalance. And also, microchips have been implanted somehow into human bodies via vaccines, GMOs, fluoride, chemtrails, etc. Fucking all comes together. chemtrails and reptoids. Damn. But you can get the surgery that, of course, only mom can do this surgery, which will remove these things from your bodies. During the surgery, which is done over Skype, mom...
I think that's the best part of this.
Mom will bilocate to your, quote, energetic system to clear out all of these inorganic materials and microchips from your body for the low suggested non-refundable fee of $88.88. Lucky numbers, as we learned.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Other sessions available include spiritual ascension sessions, which is where she provides you with tools and techniques to guide your ascension journey, astrological services, holistic healing services, and flame twin sessions. So you can attract your, quote, true flame twin. Unclear what that is. It seems like some kind of a soulmate or something. Basically, she gives you dating advice.
What?
Liz, if you click on the projects section of the website, you can see a multitude of projects that people can get involved in once you are a member. Important projects such as rock painting.
Rock painting?
Rock painting. Yes, you paint rocks.
Sure.
I think you're supposed to put the website or the name Love Has Won somewhere on your rock when you paint it.
Of course.
There are driveway boxes, which is essentially an informational kiosk with pamphlets that you put at the end of your driveway for people to pick up and read about. You can contribute to mom's biography. There are ambassador sessions where you can learn how to become a leader in the group. You can reach out to celebrities. We want to get more of a celebrity presence with the group. For a while, they were working on what's called an oracle deck. That project is now complete. The oracle deck is like a deck of cards, and each card has a trait that people are supposed to embody for ascension.
Sure.
There's projects with artwork, poetry, songs, of course, donations. That's a project. Just donate. You can help write testimonials and articles. You can help design games and apps. You can help with ads, promotions, social media. They also have t-shirts and apparel that you can help make. Their merch. They have more merch than we do at this point.
Can we just go back to the donate for a second?
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to say anything because I didn't know how deep you're going to get into that. But if that's all you have to say about the donate, I just want
I had to pick and to choose where out. I dug in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just curious about that. So I was scrolling through. And so you can donate, and in exchange, you can get little things just like daily astrology stuff. But one, you can donate to mom's wish list. And so you go to mom's wish list, and it says Mother God's wish list. Making Mother God happy is really easy. Send her a present. And then you click on mom's wish list, and it's a fucking Amazon wish list of dresses.
Stop it.
Well, I was going to get to this later because you brought it up now. There is a project that's called Make Mom Happy, which is essentially send mom presents. That says here, let me skip down.
Why am I not the leader of a cult?
Bring Mom Joy project. Mom loves dresses, incense, tea, candles, and wax melts. So pretty much one project is just sending gifts to mom of shit she likes.
Yeah,
so
she just has an Amazon wish list on her donation page, which I'm looking at like 15 sundresses and like some spa baskets of like lotions and aromatherapy stuff.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest, I don't hate these dresses.
I mean, you're allowed to agree with her fashion sense, I suppose. There's also the Mother's Garden of Eden project. So they are rebuilding the Garden of Eden in three undisclosed locations. You can help this project by supplying some of the following things. A cow, gender unspecified. A goat, one male, one female. So that's two goats, really. A parrot gray or macaw and a white parrot house. Stables, an irrigation pump.
What?
Weed eater. Lemon tree. Orange tree, cherry tree, artichoke tree, and bush. So I guess mom doesn't know how artichokes grow, if it's a tree or a bush. So she's covering her bases by saying artichoke tree and bush.
Just all of them.
The answer is neither. Artichokes are in the thistle family and they grow on stalks. So mom doesn't know that apparently, even though she created them.
I thought mom created everything.
I don't know. And also apple tree. You can also help with the project of designing children's coloring books, translating their materials. They have a tea project because mom loves tea, so they're growing their own tea, and you can help with the packaging and labeling and stuff. Most concerning, well, this is second most concerning, light centers, which is where these centers they're designing where you can take, adults can take master classes in things such as astrology, alchemy, energy work, crystals. Most concerning, though, is they're designing what are called crystal schools, donation-based schools for children. So yes, they want to indoctrinate children, teaching them things such as chakra, tarot cards, crystals, gardening, sacred geometry. I guess we all learned hedonistic geometry in public school. Alchemy, astrology,
I
mean,
I felt that it was hedonistic at the time, but
yeah, I fucking hated it. Those schools were set to open in June 2020, per the website. Don't think that it happened.
No? What? Why is that? Gestures widely to everything.
Because 2020 is burning to the ground. So when I just dug into the website, I kind of thought like, all right, this is clearly just like a money-making scheme. Like it's a scam, they're con artists, whatever. But when I found this article from Guru Magazine that I alluded to a little bit earlier, it actually brought a much darker side of this cult to light. So in July 2020, they posted this article, which is based on interviews from former followers and videos that the cult has posted. And so they make the following claims. Amy Carlson has sex with her followers, drinks heavily, does drugs, only lets people sleep 3 to 4 hours per night.
That's where I draw the line.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, there's my deal breaker there.
Verbally abuses her members. Actually, this is your deal breaker, Tracy. Rations food to the point where people lose significant amounts of weight.
Nope.
Yeah. No maple syrup when Amy's around. No waffles. No waffles.
Oh!
She will break people down until, quote, they have no sense of worth or self-identity left. She gives them daily report cards, and when they do things that, quote, dishonor her, she makes them confess them over live video streams. And if she feels the need to punish somebody, she will drop you off at Desolation Row, which pretty much means they just literally just drop
leave you
off
in the
woods. Yeah, leave you out in the desert or the woods with nothing, and you have to fend for yourself and, like, make your way back. That is her punishment.
How many followers does she have?
So, like, physically with her, from what I've read, like, there's maybe 20 or something people at a time. Like, I don't think there's a ton of people physically with her. It's kind of like the other cult that I mentioned where, like, there's only a small handful of actual followers who come to be with her. But I don't know how people are actually, like, people will just watch her videos and, like, believe in her or, you know, in their own sense follow her, but not physically to the extent that they're with her. Yeah.
I think Craig wants to have his bachelor party at Desolate Row.
Desolation Row. Back.
Yeah.
Have at it, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Carlson also claims Robin Williams is a member from beyond the grave. She says that they talk to him regularly and he is the Archangel Zadkiel.
I thought that I was upset about the rations, but I'm more upset that you would take Sir Robin Williams' name in vain.
Yes, yeah, seriously. People who have come out of the cult say that, you know, they get conned out of their money and their possessions in typical cult fashion.
Of course.
In one video that I watched once and was horrified, mom is seen abusing a cat. So the cat disobeyed her, supposedly. And so, like, in this video, she's, like, holding it by the scruff, screaming and cursing and spitting in its face. She, like, holds it up overhead by its scruff and the cat's, like, growling and she's, like, cursing at it, and it's just, it's really hard to watch.
I don't like that.
Yeah, and so her, I guess this, you know, obviously caused some controversy, and, like, three of her followers, or maybe it was four, I don't remember, a few of them sat down and made this video to, like, defend mom. And the one girl is just like, it's very simple. Mom is God. And, like, that's her defense. Like, the cat disobeyed mom. Then. Mom is God. Whatever mom does about it is fine. Like, NBD. It was very upsetting to watch. There was a member in 2019 named Robbie Foley who gave Carlson his $10,000 trust fund and his SUV and then went missing, and he's not been seen ever since.
What?
Yeah.
Well, that's a murder.
And in May 2020, a man named Alex Witten was sucked in by mom's videos for some reason, and he left his wife and kids to go be with mom, like, in Colorado. 3 days after he got there, he was found wandering in the desert in Colorado, naked, dehydrated, with, like, cactus needles stuck in his feet and actively hallucinating, possibly drugged.
Oh, God.
He refused to go to the hospital for treatment because he thought the cult would heal him, even though they were the ones who dropped him off there to begin with.
Yeah.
The cult claimed that they just didn't like his energy, so essentially booted him out by dropping him off in the desert.
Okay, you could just be like, you've been voted off the island. Like, you don't have to do that.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
This woman is crazy and mean. Like,
yeah, this is less lighthearted.
You cannot reason with her. She's just an angry, angry person. And probably not sober 99% of the time. So now this guy is back with his family and he stopped watching her videos. But it's the article said that even for like weeks afterwards, he was kind of struggling with this inner feeling that like when he was with the cult, he was like on some kind of important mission that he was supposed to be on. So like even after he had gone through that experience, he was still like clinging to them somehow.
Ugh.
And now let's get to Love Has Won in Hawaii.
Yeah.
All these cults, they really like it in Hawaii.
That's right. Another cult decided to relocate to Hawaii during pandemic times, which is how it came to my attention.
Amazing.
On September 3rd, 2020, the Honolulu Civil Beat posted an article about Love Has Won relocating to Kauai. So at that point in time, 14 members had already moved into a beachfront rental property and had been there for about a month. And there were like a few others who were in a hotel airport doing their quarantine before they were going to go to the beach house. One follower claimed that they came to Hawaii because mom has cancer and is paralyzed from the waist down, so they thought the warm island air would do her good, which is like, she's fucking God. Why can't she just heal her own cancer? Yeah. Why did she get cancer to begin with?
Was this on her wish list, a Hawaii beach house? The Amazon wish list?
Somewhere on her page, it says that her surgeries or whatever have healed stage 4 cancers and HIV and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. So she cures everything.
Yeah.
Well, apparently not her legs.
Apparently not. Kauai residents were immediately wary of their arrival and questioned their intentions. They believed that the cult was predatory of vulnerable populations and also offensive and appropriative of Hawaiian cultures, especially when Carlson started to claim that she was the reincarnation of Pele, who is a Hawaiian deity.
Oh, that's not great.
So they were like, ah, oh, fuck no. Like, get out of here, bitch. Who are you?
Yeah.
So the following day, after this news story came out, protests began outside of the rental property in Kauai. So it started with 60 people, and then it grew to over 100. So at 4 p.m. that day, it was a Friday, they started with a pule, which is a Hawaiian prayer. The purpose of this was to keep them calm and teach aloha. Then they started setting beach bonfires around the house. They said as a symbol of purification, not as an intimidation tactic, but sure.
They're going to burn down the farmhouse.
Around 6 p.m., the fire department came and put the fire out. And then after nightfall, a bunch of people left, but those that remained did get destructive. There was a firework set off. Windows on the house were broken. There was a car in the front of the house, like in the driveway, that was, you know, dented and had the windows smashed in. The police were called multiple times.
Mom's not going to be happy.
Yeah. Protests continued all weekend long. The police didn't have any reason to arrest the cult members. Like, unlike the other cult, Carbon Nation, no one broke quarantine. And they weren't actually doing anything illegal by being there. They just, people didn't want them there. And I guess they, I don't think they arrested any protesters either, maybe because they couldn't prove who did what. And they were mostly just like standing outside the house with signs and stuff. So nobody got arrested. On September 7th, the day that I wrote most of these notes, the cult members were escorted by police to the airport. Supposedly, the county had offered them an escort if they decided to leave voluntarily. So they weren't like legally kicked out, but they were like, look, things are getting kind of heated. If you want to get out, we'll help you get to the airport. And of course, the protesters applauded when they were walking out.
Sure.
The group tried to relocate to Maui, but when they got to Maui, there were airport screeners who determined that whatever reservations they had made on Maui was not an approved location for some reason. And they all got rerouted back to Colorado. And now they are once again Colorado's problem.
Well, thanks a lot, assholes.
In conclusion, don't bring your cult to Hawaii. Yeah. We don't want you.
A gift from Steph to Tracy.
Yeah, I'm not pleased. You know what? If you want updates on how Steph's unwanted gift is turning out for Tracy, you can listen to Harpy Hour on iTunes.
Where can I listen?
It's iTunes and Spotify and Google Play and Stitcher and TuneIn and iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen, please rate us and leave us a stellar review. Out of this world.
Then take a picture of it and subscribe and send it to us and you will get a sticker.
Please do.
I think I'm going to go into the script and change all of the streaming platforms to all caps so that it'll just match Tracy's yelling.
I learned it from Mom.
Yeah.
Also, if you have stories you think we might like, or you just want to say hello because you think we're awesome, which we are, you know we're awesome, you can email us at harpyhourpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at harpyhourpod. Give us all the likes, shares, retweets, reposts, all that stuff.
Do it.
And we are also on Patreon. So if you have extra money lying around, you just can't figure out what to do with it, burning a hole in your pocket, what do I spend this money on? Spend it on Harpy Hour. Head on over to Patreon, donate to us to help keep us on the air. We will give you goodies and such in return. Por favor, gracias. Thanks for listening. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.